So basically the policy at the moment, New Zealand as a government doesn't have a policy on the polar platform.
It does not have a policy on space.
Period.
That includes polar platform.
Right.
There, I've said that in my ANZAS paper, so I'm not. I'm quite happy to be quoted on that. The situation at the moment is that because of the long track record of our group, that is the group within the SIR that's been working since 1973 on Earth resources satellites, we were invited to become observer members of the International Forum for Earth Observation Using Space Station Elements, otherwise known as IFIOS. And IFIOS has met twice. The last meeting was a few months back, just a short while back actually, in Tokyo. And the scheme is that the company, the countries involved and organisations involved in IFIOS are all those who are the major players in the Northern Hemisphere space activities. But it includes Australia, because Australia already has a good track record in this whole thing. It's been well coordinated, and it's viewed with a lot of favour by the Americans and by the Europeans. So IFIOS at the moment consists of the major European countries, France, Germany, Italy, the UK. It consists of the big organisations like American NASA and NOAA. It consists of the Japanese, the Canadians, the European Space Agency as an entity. It also has EUMETSAT, which is another European meteorological organisation. It also has, of course, Australia and India represented, because they're now becoming a space nation, if you like, and Brazil, although Brazil has never actually turned up to any of the meetings so far, and New Zealand. Now, of those countries, New Zealand is the only one which does not have any active commitment to the programs of the 1990s. And, of course, IFIOS is meant for Earth observation. Its prime interest is in the polar platforms and in the satellites that are leading up to the polar platforms. So they're really trying to act as a coordinating agency to make sure that each country is making a contribution in that area. What they were looking for from us was, first of all, to show willing in the sense that we could use the data and develop the means to use the data in this country, and more particularly to receive it here so that we could act as a sort of South Pacific base for direct data reception. We would augment, if you like, what's already happening in Australia, in Alice Springs, possibly in Hobart as well. So in return for us providing reception facilities, data to Europe and to the USA and to the other players in the game, the idea was that this would qualify us for full membership of IFIOS, so we would be able to continue. And at the same time, they would require us to set up some sort of organisation like COSA, which would become the New Zealand focal point for these sorts of activities. And in return for that, we could then start to specify what flies on the polar platforms, or help to specify what flies on the polar platforms to represent our interests, if you like. And also, the other thing that we've proposed, along with Australia, is that we offer New Zealand as a base for calibration and validation exercises. So a lot of the instruments that will be flown will need conditions that are well documented and which they can use to calibrate their own performance, so to speak. Particularly sort of large wave structures out at sea. Well, the Southern Ocean around New Zealand is pretty good from that point of view. Chlorophyll content of the sea. We do measurements in this country. There's a whole lot of things that we could do in conjunction with Australia.
And so a lot of those funding, that could be funded for overseas some of that work, couldn't it?
A lot of it would be funded from overseas. We would probably provide the sort of logistical support in this country and some of the analysis support as well. It would mean that we would need to integrate with Australia to a high degree, and in order to do this, I was invited to join the Polar Platform Committee, which was commissioned by COSA, but which was chaired by John Richards, who's now, I think, with the Defence Academy in Canberra, Professor John Richards. And that's just produced two volumes, a report, which has the New Zealand contribution as well. And the idea is that we would offer complementary facilities here, which together with Australia would make it very attractive for the Northern Hemisphere, the spacecraft organisers, builders if you like, to physically fly the things over here and use this as a calibration facility. So that's where we're at the present time. We're interested in some of the new spacecraft coming along, like ERS-1. We put in a submission along with the Australians for that. Our submission didn't get as well received, but frankly it's because the degree of effort that's available in this country to prepare these submissions or actually promise a high degree of cooperation is non-existent. Our Met Service, in fact, is the most likely organisation to be able to participate in these things, and it's their submission which has been accepted by Europe at the present time.
Well, the Australians are backing us now. He's quite interested, but we don't have anybody who comes out and talks in favour of even science, not to learn space.
No, that's right. The science scene in New Zealand, I don't mind being quoted on it, I think is in a pretty poor state. It can get extremely frustrating. Those of us who are running divisions like this one here in DSIR, we're being constrained to become commercial. Now we can do that, we are doing it. We're getting into product development, we're getting into sales, marketing, links with overseas companies, and so on. So ultimately, we can be, I hope, bringing in quite a lot of revenue from sources other than direct government funding. The only thing that bothers me is that there is a lot of R&D which ought to be happening in New Zealand that may not happen because of the diversion of this effort into other areas. So, that's the way it seems to be. It's not a good time for us to be asking to set up a New Zealand version of COSA. I have already done so, and got nowhere so far.
So the space section just has to stay part of DIT?
As far as DSIR is concerned, ours is the only space-oriented group, if you like, that exists, and we do it on sufferance at the present time. Really, the hard word is going out that we should be looking at other areas of information technology. So, it's quite a battle.
In that what area?
Good question. We run, 70% of our activities are running the national DSIR computing network. So we're acting as CyroNet, if you like, in Australia as well.
They're being sold off.
Well, they're being sold off, but we're charging our DSIR divisions now for our work. If they don't want it, they don't pay for it, and we have to contract accordingly. So it's becoming fairly commercial in that sense as well. We're supposed to be looking at new areas of information technology to assist New Zealand industry and DSIR. There are some quite clear areas where we could actually do some useful work in. Software engineering in particular. The person-machine interface. Archival storage. There's a range of different things that we are sort of slowly moving into. But in some respects, we do not yet have a clear mandate or clear user needs, if you like, in some of these areas. And I'm not prepared to put a lot of net-funded money into new areas unless we can see some sort of payoff in the sense of people using it at the end of it. So that's something that we're working on at the present time. In the meantime, we've got an image processing group which is has been built up over the last 12 years or so. It's as good as any in the world, I reckon, even now, and it has a world reputation. And if you look at information technology in general, as I've just done at Hanover, I've just come back from the Hanover Trade Fair, which is the biggest information technology exhibition in the world, by a large order, I would say. And you find that imaging technology is the name of the game. If you look around there, there's 19 huge halls, some of the two stories, filled with information technology equipment of various sorts, displays. Almost every one of them uses high quality colour displays for what they're doing. Even their business computing is moving in that direction. Imaging is coming up in CAD, in satellite work as we've been doing, in animation, in image synthesis as they call it. They've got a whole laboratory for image synthesis in Luxembourg, in places funded by the European Community. The whole of this area of information technology is growing at a tremendous rate. So I think that what we have already done, although it's only in one aspect of it, is still valid, and in fact we should be building on it in the future. And one way to help us do that would be if we were more involved in the space technology, because a lot of the other work spins off directly out of the space stuff. And we've proved that we can make and sell software and hardware which is as good as any you'll find anywhere else in the world. But most other countries have now got some sort of policy towards this whole business. New Zealand as yet does not have a policy. It's as simple as that.
Do we have a policy on anything else?
What do you think would be the best way for us to go about forming a policy?
I think we have to get the catalyst, which is this receiving station in the first instance. If we can get it commercially funded, that's great, but that will imply that the government departments at least have come up with some guarantees for continued funding through the next few years. If that gets underway, then that will give a source of data which is coming in virtually daily and which will act as a stimulus for all sorts of organisations in New Zealand, for instance, to set up their own image analysis facilities. And we've been working towards that end. Our whole software package is devoted to producing relatively cheap packages for people to use if the need arises. So if the data suddenly becomes available, essentially daily, there will be a big influx of people wanting to analyse it on a regular basis. Now, an example of that, just recently, was this cyclone, Cyclone Bola. I was out of the country. But this thing hit, as you know, the East Coast, and we were able to ask our French compatriots, by the way, we're the spot agents for this country. DIT is a commercial agent for a French company selling spot images. We were able to get the spot satellite switched on over the cyclone hit area, and it's been able to record essentially all the slips and washouts and other things that have occurred because of its 10 metre resolution. We have not yet got the images in this country. We could have had them a day after the event. It simply hasn't happened. We're now trying to get the images through various diplomatic channels as quickly as we reasonably can. In fact, they've even involved some of our government ministers in trying to speed the process up. So clearly there are applications for this stuff which would be of real use in this country. Monitoring our oceans around New Zealand, I mean it's got a massive great ocean area around it. In many ways it's an absolute gift. There's no other way you would do it on a routine basis in the same way as you would do from satellites.
What about anyone in New Zealand using MOS, Maritime Observation Satellite, in Japan?
We'd love to. No, short answer is nobody has used MOS. We, to my knowledge, have never received any pictures from MOS. I'm not even sure whether the Japanese have onboard recorders. I know the Australians are working with MOS and they have a 6-month agreement. They're actually receiving the data in Australia through the so-called signal processing experiment, which was set up by Ken McCracken and Cossa. Good on them. It's a great idea. Again, it's an example of what happens when you've got a coordinating agency that's actually working in that field and looking for all the possibilities that are coming up. So it's the sort of thing that, in my view, we should have here. And I'm looking at the figures which were presented at IFIOS, where one conservative estimate was $13 billion being spent by the various partners in IFIOS on the Polar Platform program between now and 1997, or whenever the first one's due to go up. That's an awful lot of money. And it seems to me that, that if New Zealand wants to be a medium technology country, then one way of doing this is to start to tap into this sort of technology and use it to develop its own infrastructure. So, for instance, with simple things like the radiometer, we've been able to put work out to small companies around Wellington. What we do here is we coordinate the radiometer, but it's all made by individual companies around this area. And those companies could be help to be sustained if we had a regular sale of these things going on all the time. I mean, even the lenses are made in New Zealand, and they're very well made by a very small company, two people, over in Parramatta. So there's no reason why the technology shouldn't be used to stimulate local industries and help to solve a lot of the problems that we've currently got. In my view, that's what we should be trying to do. And DSIR, in a way, could act like NASA, that's the National Aeronautics and Space Administration in the States, which has been doing that for years. They act as they draw up the plans for the systems, and then they contract out to large and small subcontractors all around America and help keep the industries going, essentially. Now, why the hell can't we do that here? And use some of our own money effectively to build these sort of infrastructures. But I'm afraid the climate at the moment is not very sympathetic to that sort of view at all, as far as I can see.
They've got their funding problems in Australia too.
Yeah, I'm sure that that's true. I know that
the immediate projects have just fallen through.
COSA went for a fair increase of funds, and they actually got it last year, or they got some of it last year, as far as I understand.
Yes.
But instead of getting an increase this year, it's gone down slightly, I think, hasn't it?
It went down, and they're hoping for an increase again this year, but hoping is
yes.
But
you see,
the thing is the Space Board as well. That's a separate thing from COSA.
Yes, I know.
And as you know, and that just got nothing underway at all.
They're not getting the funds. I've just been
out for months and not getting it. Yes. Well, the fact that COSA exists, in spite of the funding problems, and I know what the funding problems are like even in England, because I've been over there recently. I'm a member of the Institute of the Academy of Astronautics, which has its meeting once a year. This year was in Brighton in England, and I got over to that. And they were, in fact, moaning very loudly about the way the government was treating them in their space activities relative to France and Germany and so on.
Yes.
There's no doubt that the British investment is fairly small in relation to what France and Germany are putting into space. On the other hand, they were complaining because they hadn't been granted an increase from £100 million a year to £300 million a year. In fact, the British government has pegged the space money at somewhere around about £100 million a year. But that's a big advance on nothing, which is the case in this country. Now in Australia, it's small. I think COSA was getting about 5.3 million last year or something in that region. 14 people working essentially on that sort of money. Now, you can do a lot with 5.3 million in terms of coordination, particularly if you get all the universities getting into the area and working along with you or behind you or whatever else. So although it's small, it's a big advance on nothing. And really, I think in our case, we have to get the perception in this country that it is something that can be used to advantage, to boost the indigenous industries here. The expertise, the skills are here. I wouldn't say the expertise is, but the skills certainly are here. And you'd be surprised at the number of facilities we've got in New Zealand that could be used in this sort of area. Physics and Engineering Laboratory has got thermal testing chambers, which we use for the radiometer, which are superb. There are vibration test facilities, there are anechoic chambers, there are all sorts of radio test facilities in places like the University of Otago at Dunedin. If you put the whole thing together, you end up with a lot of different possibilities that could happen in this country if it was properly coordinated. And currently at the moment it is not, and there is no mandate to coordinate it. So essentially what I've been suggesting is that providing we're able to get off the ground with our receiving station, the next thing we should do is to put together what I would call a New Zealand Space Coordination Group. I wouldn't call it a space agency. It would probably consist of three people, and those people would be a small secretariat, if you like, who would attend the overseas meetings on space activities, who would find out all the possibilities that exist in terms of collaboration in projects and possibly even getting contracts for New Zealand industry, would present all this to New Zealand industry, and conversely would do all the rounds of the New Zealand universities and industries and find out what they've got to offer, and actually put this together as a sort
of
compendium.
Look at our niche.
And work out where our niche is in this whole technology. Now, to my mind, the funding for that would be in the region of, let's say, $500,000 a year. So it's 10 times down on what COSA already gets. But it would still be enough for us to begin to pull things together and start getting some tangible results. The other thing I think we need to do is to recognise that we ought to be in the business of building our infrastructures, which is what this would be aimed at, in order to be able to manufacture things like the radiometer or software, which might be part of a project that's a space project that's going on overseas. To my mind, it's the only way we're going to avoid slipping back into a sort of peasant economy.
Slipping back.
It's the same exactly the same talk.
I thought it was just
a Well, you know, it's makes you wonder a bit sometimes.
It's not
exactly the same talk going on in Australia, except on a larger scale.
Well, I think from what I've seen of Australia, it is further down the track than we are. We've got catching up to do. There was a time when we first started in the image processing business that in fact we were able to go across and help the Australians set up their own image processing facility, because we already had one running and we had the equipment here and the expertise here. That is no longer the case. The situation is now reversed, and regardless of your funding problems, you're a long way ahead of where we are at the present time.
There's one thing. At the third engineering space conference in Canberra last year, the group in Tasmania that you already mentioned,
it's Carl Wilson, yeah,
they're talking about setting up a receiving station for remote sensing, and talking about putting one in Antarctica.
Yes,
and that's exactly something that New Zealand could whip in there and do.
Yes.
Once it's one in Antarctica, it can be in the Ross Dependency.
Yeah. We've asked, actually, that they seriously consider, if the Australians are going to put one in, New Zealand won't do it, I'm sure of that. But if Australia does put one in, it would be better at Casey, from our point of view, if it's possible, because it would give the best possible coverage, and it would also cover the Ross Dependency.
Yes.
So we know, I've got Ken McCracken's proposal for the Antarctic one, and I know also that there is talk of putting one on the northwest coast as well, Carnarvon or somewhere around about that sort of area. It doesn't detract from the fact that we need one in New Zealand, in my view. And quite blatantly, I see it as the stimulus for the users around New Zealand to get serious about actually doing their own analysis work and using it as a tool. If it's available 3 weeks later, people aren't going to be that interested in it. It's mostly dynamic things that we're looking for here. I mean, natural disasters, if you like the cyclone, agricultural things, chlorophyll in the sea for fishing purposes, and so on. And I think we have to get something here which will then act as a catalyst for our future activities. And if we don't do that, we will be no longer members of IFIOS. The agreement was that the observer members would remain as observer members for 2 years only. And if by the end of that time they hadn't convinced the committee that they could become full members because of their participation, we were out. Now Australia, right at the start, said, well, we're already doing enough. Ken McCracken, in his usual way, very persuasively put it across to the group, and Australia was accepted at the outset as a full member. We were not.
We didn't have anything going.
Well, we couldn't argue. You know, I mean, the point is, you had acres, you had all sorts of things happening over there, you know, which Ken could point to and say, look, you know, we're doing this. We're already a member, essentially.
They've also got a certain amount of instrumentation pretty well ready to fly.
Well, Ian Barton, of course, is one of the main characters in this general area, and the whole work that's going on with England. You see, I used to work with the group over in England under John Horton and Desmond Smith, working on the Nimbus series of satellites. So I spent a lot of my early years building bits for satellites and physically going over and installing them in General Electric at in America. And Ian is doing a lot of work with the people in Rutherford Appleton Laboratory, for instance, in England. And, you know, very good work it is too. And there's quite a few people in Australia that individually are making quite a big contribution as far as I can see. Now, there's nobody here. Really, Ross Cochrane working in the applications field, which is great from his university point of view, and he's running a successful teaching course in remote sensing. But apart from things like that, there's nothing else that I know of which is active in the sense of working in the space field at all, really.
Except none of Russ's graduates can't get jobs.
Yes,
no.
Yes, we
no one employing people in that area.
No, well, I mean, we've had requests from, you know, we had an applications group here. You've seen our applications group. That was Stella. She's sort of holding the fort. She's actually acting as our spot agent at the moment. Because we have the agency for spot IMARS, she's actually masterminding all that. But there's very little chance for applications groups here. The only other applications group is at the Cowtery, which is up north of here, near Palmerston North. And Peter Stevens and his group in the Ministry of Works have been working for quite a long time in application studies. So we've been using them as our applications group, so to speak. We've been working together because we complement each other pretty well. But now they've disbanded Ministry of Works. So group is now being moved to DSIR, but we're not sure whether it will actually stay together as a group or not. It depends on you know, whether there's money available or not. But the whole of Ministry of Works and Water and Soil Division has been carved up.
So do you think there's an opening for it? We've already mentioned the possibility of a commercial ground station here. There's a chance for an EOSAT type or spot type organisation to come in into the New Zealand market and
well, that's what RS
set up.
Do the whole hog from receiving the data
to
processing it and to marketing it to.
Well, that's what RSCS are setting themselves up to do. Now, it may be that existing organisations like the Department of Survey and Land Information decide to take a big hand in this. If they do, that's fine. But essentially, the data will be owned by a commercial organisation. Their prime task will be in marketing what they produce from it. The scheme will be that we will act as the operators of the station. We'll run it for them. That's DIT. We will archive the data for them, so we'll tackle the archiving problems as well, which is not easy. And we will also do the frontline image processing, so the sort of standard image processing will be done here as well. Now, from then on, it's a question of negotiation, I guess, between some of the players like Departments of Survey and Land Information and RSCS as to how they set up the downstream processing effort. There will be a group, at least, there will be several groups, I hope, in this country who will be the analysts, if you like, who will be taking the data and working with it as users. That won't be our role. I particularly want us to stay away from that so that we can concentrate on the technology, because that's really what we're here for. So it could work out very well, you know, if the final hurdle is overcome and sufficient guarantees are obtained to make the thing viable.
Do you find that the downstream people, the actual end user, is prepared to pay, or do they really want a free product?
They are increasingly being prepared to pay. That's the big question, really. That they're beginning to realise that the only way they're going to get it is to pay. People are already paying $3,000 a tape for spot products that we're getting through spot in Toulouse. You know, so it's quite a long time after the event that we actually get the picture. But they're still prepared to pay $3,000 because they appreciate that they're getting 3,600 square kilometres of coverage. And if it was done by aircraft, it would cost a hell of a lot more than that.
Sure.
You know, so the East Coast one is a classic example. If we had had it days after the event, it would have been part of the planning cycle in terms of the group that's looking to recompense farmers and people who've lost property and so on as a result of this whole thing. Right now they're bending over backwards to try and get the pictures. We know that they exist, but we have not yet received them in this country, and it's weeks after the event. So
it might convince them to do something about it.
Well, it's possible. But the user pays philosophy is so pervasive at the moment.
Is that situation being publicised in New Zealand?
No.
I haven't heard that it is,
no. Because that could generate a bit of public enthusiasm.
Yes,
for.
I would like to think so. In fact, I think RSCS ought to be making something out of it. The thing is, we've passed over the sort of publicising role to them, because they're the ones who are trying to find the money, and I don't want to tread on their toes, but I'm going to talk to them about it to see whether we can stir it up a bit in that respect.
What's the other?
Sorry?
Who are they?
Well, they're the TV3 company.
Oh,
they're
nice.
The same group that has got the TV3 license.
Resource Satellite Services Corporation.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, that's.
And you quite have to leave it up to them then?
They are a pretty energetic bunch. They've done a lot of quite strong lobbying over the last few months. There are a few things that I want to try and do to help them. You know, as far as I'm concerned, if they can get anything and go ahead, that's fine. It'll leave us in a rather curious situation because, for instance, the military may find themselves buying military sensitive information from a commercial company, which is. You know, why I think a lot of overseas governments tend to put the money in themselves and have it as a government-operated system. However, if that's the way they want it, then that's the way they're going to get it, I guess. It could be that our military people, in fact, recognising that, are prepared to come to the party to a much bigger extent than we expected. But there's a lot hanging on what decisions are made in the next couple of months. In the meantime, you know, we've got a good group here. We've got a superb package of image processing, probably quite unique package in some ways. In Australia, you've got things like MicroBrion and these other packages. I think ours is somewhat different. For a start, I think it's a much bigger package. It's been developed over a long period.
and it's very specifically oriented towards mapping and rectification and mosaicing of images and the like. So people who want to make maps from satellite imagery will find EPIC particularly used to them. And of course it also extends into other areas. We use it, a spin-off activity if you like, is what we now do for the police. Use EPIC for forensic image processing. So we're able to use the same technology to de-blur images that have been taken with a shaky camera at the scene of a crime, for example. So we can actually sharpen up the images and improve on these. One rather classic example, there was a picture taken at the scene of a murder of a bloodstained footprint. And it was taken at an angle. And it wasn't acceptable as evidence in court because it had not been taken vertically with some sort of scale alongside it. However, it was taken on a tiled kitchen floor. The size of the tiles were known precisely. So we were able to actually do a rectification exercise. We digitised the image and we reproduced it as if it had been taken directly from above. You know? So there's all sorts of things you can do. We found, for instance, that our hill shading routine, which is part of the EPIC package, you can actually get a digital terrain map of the country and you can generate a contour, a hill shaded image, a relief image, if you like, of the whole South Island, for instance, we've got. We found that if we do this in local areas, around airports, for example, the people who want to sight a new radar for the airport can effectively put the sun in the position of the radar on top of the hill they're proposing to put it on, and then see all the shaded areas as a result of that by using the same technology. So that's another thing that we now do fairly routinely for civil aviation. You know, there's a lot of spin-off activities that come out of this, and in terms of information technology, the experience we've gained in imaging technology in general could be put to extremely good use in that area. So,
yes, I have to be hopeful, but
the question really is that originally we had Landsat. We had the multispectral scanner with 80 metre resolution in the visible and near infrared, and that's what everybody thinks about. Now, what is currently available are this range of instruments that boggles the mind almost. You've got the extended range into the infrared, you've got thermal images, you've got chlorophyll images, you've got high resolution things like the HRV on spot and so on, 10 metre resolution. You've got to my mind, one of the next big moves will be towards synthetic aperture radar. Synthetic aperture radar is in its infancy at the moment. They've flown it successfully on CERN, the shuttle imaging system. They've flown it briefly on CSAT, but there's an enormous range of this going on. The ERS-1 is going to be one of the next major players in this game, the Canadian radar sat if it gets off the ground. The whole question of interpreting data from radar and using multiple wavelength radars, multiple polarization radars, and how you interpret all that stuff and how you make it into colour composites and interpret the results is wide open. I mean, it's a whole new field of remote sensing, which is potentially much bigger than the original visible and near-infrared field, in my view. Moreover, you've got things like the wind scatterometers for wind speed and direction on the sea surface. You've got radar altimeters. You've got all this range of heat capacity mapping devices like HICM, which you know, flew briefly at least some time back. You've got all these range of devices which, to my mind, ought to be put across in a simple way to the public, at least to make them aware of what the possibilities are. You've got the polar platforms themselves. You've got the satellites leading up to the polar platforms, JERS-1, the Japanese ERS, the European ERS, Eureka if it gets off the ground, a number of other things, which the program is enormous. The money involved are enormous as well.
Yes.
Now, you know, why shouldn't we, or one way, in fact, to get people fired up is to make them aware of all this, and I think this is where I have been deficient in not sitting down and writing an article or getting one written that would really put this across. Well, it's difficult. Not easy, that's for sure. I think again, Australia's
not aware of.
Yeah, well, there's been some good articles in Australia. I've got copies. I get copies from Ken McCracken mainly when something comes out, or Christine Astley Bowden, and there's been some quite good articles in sort of popular magazines in Australia, which have spelled it out. Australian Women's Weekly actually had.
Oh, that was Kathy.
Had a good one in not so long back. Yeah, there's maybe some of the others were not in such readily available magazines. I don't know. Certainly, I guess in New Zealand, the Listener would be about the only real possibility.
Business Review.
I tried doing something for the National Business. Yeah, yes. I've seen a couple of articles from them, but they keep refusing them
because they say Australian articles.
I tried, and the article that I wrote, one of the major one I wrote for them. To send on spec, to see if they'd publish it, was on what Australia was doing and saying, well, look, this is what New Zealand could be doing too. And they wrote back and said it was not relevant enough to New Zealand.
That was a disappointment.
Which I thought was, it was exactly relevant to New Zealand, because this is what Australia was doing. I said, New Zealand will miss out unless it treads the same path.
That was last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, they just sent it back.
Yeah, incredible.
So you don't get everything published, but you get some things published.
I think if we've got some reasonably low level but well illustrated one going in the Listener, that would actually excite some of these other people as well. Suddenly make them sit up and take notice. You see, we've also had a very vocal anti-lobby in this country. There have been a group of people who have remained anonymous all the way through and have written articles in the New Zealand Science Review and in other things more recently. We think we know who some of them are, but the general thrust of their whole argument is that satellites and US and all these things have connotations which are mainly military ones.
Right.
And that
same thing happened,
there's no way that New Zealand should be involved in satellite technology, period.
But the others are doing it, so
Yes.
Yeah. Well, stay out of it.
You and I know what the arguments are. It's ridiculous. You know, but we have had a very vocal one. And they've used a lot of arguments saying that it's irrelevant to New Zealand and that the information is not worth it that you get from it, which I do not believe. However,
I had a very irate call from a chap at Auckland University after a letter I had it published in the Listener. Related to Mount John satellite tracking station and so on, and he berated me for about an hour.
for advocating the
he wrote a letter to the Listener, which I wrote a rebuttal to, and he didn't like my rebuttal one little bit. He got quite upset over it and so on. What annoyed him most was that he wasn't going to have a third. He knew the Listener would refuse to give any further point from him, that he'd had his chance to make his point, then I'd had this thing, and he felt the media were against him all the way.
Mm.
And that was his feeling.
Well, he wanted it closed down, did he, or something?
He was totally against it, and said it was a US military spy base and all that, the whole story.
Well,
those stories started off in the Canterbury University.
I'm sure
student
if we get
magazine,
our
and continued
space.
On through Crackham and Auckland, and went on through the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, well, that it's probably the same sort of group in many ways that have been very vocal against our activities to try and get this thing off the ground. And if the Otaki receiving station does actually get going, we may have problems in that area. There it is.
Yeah.
It's silly, really, when you think of how much benefit it could be to this country.
Whether we do it or not, somebody else will anyway. You're not stopping anything.
Look at the fuss that went on over those dishes down at near Foxton somewhere, wasn't it? You know, there's a couple of old post office microwave dishes pointing up at the sky. Yes.
Is that right? Yeah.
That was on TV and everything.
Well, that would be
three,
Hematangi, yes. Yeah.
That's the place.
Hematangi receiving station. Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, stupid.
Anyway,
there it is.
So, thanks for your time.
So we were able to produce sort of high quality pictures right from the start, and of course we're now doing it with things like the spot image of just off the side of Wellington. Wellington's just over here, and this is the Wairarapa area with the very shallow lake area here, and you can see all the sort of sediment features and so on. It's the 20 metre resolution multispectral spot picture, as opposed to these over here, which are 10 metre resolution, and which give you an idea of what you can see. This is Auckland, a very good cloud-free one of Auckland, with the harbour bridge and the mariner and the little boats going out into the Hauraki Gulf, and clear lakes, unpolluted areas, all the sediment, of course, in the harbour itself.
You can go to our house then.
Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Our house.
Yep.
Uh huh.
Well. Spot things out. Yep.
You're still on property.
Uh huh. Is that right? Very nice too. Yeah. Anyway, you know, those are the sorts of products that we're now producing directly from digital tape, and I can show you the sort of setup that we've got here. We use it. A lot of users come here and actually work on the system here as well. So we've got our archive, which is quite large. I mean, it's all tapes that have been derived from other from NASA and so on. So none of it's been directly received, but we've got about something approaching 50,000 megabytes of data altogether, and we have this archive here, which rather keen this year to start putting onto optical disc, so that we can actually free up the tapes, and it means that we will keep the stuff. If we leave it on tape much longer, we'll probably lose it.
Either somebody erases it or us.
That's a Dolerite machine, which is writing an image at the present time. So essentially all the images you've seen out there are produced on this system here. We've got our own Microvax too, which we use for image processing, but like all the other Microvaxes, it's also connected to the network.